Boom, 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 boom. If you got a problem, a story, or even a dream, just call up the world's best podcasting team. Their names are Luke and Andrew. They're waiting for your call. And if you don't know the number, just listen up, y'all. It's 206-414-TBTL. 206-414. Come on, TBTL.
Okay, T-Bone. Time for some serious crunching.
Are you on the internet? Isn't that for techno geeks with spreadsheets?
I suck without the internet, dude. It's like I'm too real for it, you know?
Okay, so some people capture robots and drive and sell them. And no one's going to buy R2 and the shiny guy. The shiny guy always worries.
Here's some money. Go see a Star Wars.
I think the only promotion I'm interested in is promoting you guys to generals in my friendship army.
Yes, sir.
That sound like a good plan, Rudog? My goodness. You are wet.
And I thought you smelled bad on the outside, my friend.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
Either way, we got to do this right now, everybody. A Monday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Podcaster of the future of show business.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. A rainy, crummy, nasty Monday. And the pod dog was out in the yard by herself, getting rained on.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
We think that she was hiding from the sound of a rogue smoke detector in the house. Carrie and I were in Portland this morning. We drove all the way back home to Bellingham, Washington. And so Rudy was home alone from this morning when DFTB left for work until we just got home a few minutes ago. And we pulled up, and she was in the yard getting rained on. Very rare behavior for her. And when we came inside, we realized it was because one of the smoke detectors was just doing that thing where it just beeps intermittently, and we think it scared the daylights out of the pod dog. And so the pod dog was out in the yard so as to be far away from the smoke detector sound. And we have a way of fixing those smoke detectors here at Burbank Springs. It's called smashing them with a giant rock. So that's what I just did. I was out in the backyard smashing a smoke detector with a rock like a crazy person. But we've got it all handled now. Rudy is inside. She's helping me out. And we are ready to go with episode 2,604 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
A 9.5-ton Chinese space station that is no longer in use, but is floating around somewhere above the Earth. It is going to crash to Earth sometime in the next few weeks. And they say that it's probably not going to hit anyone, but I mean, do we really know?
Cannonball coming.
I looked at the path, the likely path of where it might fall. Guess what? Washington State. Dangerously close to the likely path of where this thing might crash. 9.5-ton Chinese space station. Wouldn't it be our luck? Wouldn't it just be our luck if that thing were to come to Earth and crash right in here to the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center? Or maybe crash into Andrew's new apartment? I feel like we're in the crosshairs. We really are. So we'll talk about that. Also, we got to admit, the tens of listeners, you like us.
And I can't deny the fact that you like me.
You really, really like us. How do we know? Well, because you've made all kinds of fan art and TBTL-related original audio and, I don't know if you'd call it video. You've just been making TBTL-related content like gangbusters of late, and we're going to go through some of that as well. Plus, we'll do some regular emails and V-mails, and we'll do it all with the help of this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their splendor. He bought a small perch dinner, and a lot of people don't know that about him. And he is surrounded right now by moving boxes and all manner of disruption there in the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. But it's not stopping him from having his customary early breakfast.
Is it too early to get a fish sandwich?
He is Andrew Walsh, and he joins us now. Hello, my dude.
Hello, Luke. Hello.
How are ya?
I'm doing well. I'm a little amped up today. Like you say, I'm kind of surrounded by boxes here. You know, I like order. I like, so moving is a, I think an exercise in creating order, then creating chaos, then creating order out of the chaos over and over again. Do you know what I'm talking about? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's like you're packing everything up, so the house is not the way it should be, but at least everything's in boxes, and then you're going to get it to the new place, and then it's going to be very disordered again, but then you're going to put all of your CDs in their case, you know, special tower, and then you're going to have order again.
Yeah, even on a smaller scale, though, I think what you do, like right now, I guess the house is, the entire house is starting to descend into a mild form of chaos, but or a mild state of chaos, but I feel like I like putting things in boxes. I mean, there were several times when Genevieve and I were both just screaming at each other, Genevieve, get in here! Tetris! Tetris! That's what we yell when something like that doesn't look yes. like it's going to fit into a box slides in like it was built. I had a piece of foam that I use for soundproofing. It doesn't really absorb that much foam. I don't know where I got it. It's been kicking around. I put it aside thinking this could be helpful in the move. Yesterday, I was packing up some glasses, and I thought, ugh, these things are kind of weird shaped. I don't know if they're okay to be in the bottom of the box. And then I was like, well, where's that piece of foam? I grabbed this piece of foam, and it was like somebody cut it so that it would fit perfectly in the bottom of the box so that I could then put the glasses on top of it. It was wonderful. Those moments of order are just fantastic, but you also have to kind of create chaos. You take a room that is in some sort of a normal state, and then you start tearing it apart and pulling everything out, and you can't put it directly in a box because you have to organize things, and it just becomes very chaotic. But then everything goes into boxes, and then suddenly you look around, and you're like, this room is now ordered again. Now let's create chaos somewhere else. It's a lot of that. It's been a roller coaster ride, my friend.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're pretty much ready to go? Is everything? Because we've still got some TBTL business this week. I'm going to be down there on Wednesday. We're going to do some special recording projects, and we're going to do the show. I mean, is like everything except your recording equipment currently in a box?
No. I mean, I keep going back and forth, and I think Genevieve does as well, from looking around and being like, wow, we've gotten a lot done. Like, yeah, a lot is this place is starting to look a little bit empty. And then you can, you know, go to bed and then wake up the next morning and look at everything and say, I don't know how this is all going to get done. Sometimes it's like a magic eye. Sometimes it looks like we're on a good path. Other times you get that panic. It's just like the thing that is.
You also, though, have admitted on the show that you've never actually seen a magic eye work. You've just assumed that it was working. Everybody else was seeing a waterfall with dolphins in it, but you were just at the mall staring at it, waiting for something to happen.
I'm still not convinced that it's not you guys playing it. Prank on me, but who knows? I think the and listen, this is going to be fine. I know I said before, it's as moves go, especially our moves, this is relatively easy. We took like six. We got our keys to the new place. They're still doing some work on it, but they let us like kind of start moving some boxes in. So we did like six trips, and boy, I can really, not to brag, but I can really. I can take advantage of every square inch of a car if I'm packing on moving day. So we had six full trips to the place this weekend, so that felt pretty good. I think my anxiety is coming from the very final day. You make a reference sometimes to, you know, how are you going to get the hen and the sack of flour and what's the other one?
The Quip toothbrush.
The Quip toothbrush. How are you going to get them all the way across the
Everlane River? Because the hen can brush its teeth with a Quip toothbrush,
right.
But not if there's a fox there, it feels self-conscious.
So that's what the last day is starting to look like a little bit, just like kind of figuring, okay, well, where are the cats in this? And everything's going to happen kind of at the same moment, which I'm not super psyched about, which is the movers are going to come to take our furniture around, I think, the same time that our current property guy wants to do like kind of the checklist move out thing, figure out if we're going to get any of that security deposit back. I've heard rumors.
You better get every dime of that security deposit back. You guys have... You've treated that place with the utmost respect.
I would. Yes, thank you. I would think the same thing. But rumor has it these folks are not really in the business of giving money back to people. So
yeah, but that's in the business of being an illegal landlord. I mean, that's the damage deposit is – I understand – I mean, I was a landlord ever so briefly in L.A. until the woman renting the back house brought her cracky boyfriend up and he stole all my Curb Your Enthusiasm DVDs I'd gotten for my birthday.
Well, what then? But, what did you get him back? Because I know that you still drive around in your car listening to the theme song on the DVD.
I had to buy new ones, Andrew. And it's very, you know, it's a bummer to have to buy a replacement for something you already had.
It is.
Because you're, anyway, point being, I understand why you need to have a damage deposit. But then if there's not damage, that deposit needs to be returned. And a lot of landlords just treat it as kind of part of the whole, I guess you would call it the economy of renting things out. Like, yeah, you just keep the deposit. And then you just use that to repaint the apartment for the next people. But it's like stuff like that. And if I could just turn this into a, you know, tenants' rights conversation for a moment. I don't think that normal wear and tear, you're not on the hook for that. Like if the place needs to be painted because it's been a few years, that's not on you for having lived there in those few years. Again, I know you know this, but I'm just saying I'm happy to Jesse Jones this for you.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, because – and that's how they also get you. You are in a state of trying to deal with a whole bunch of stuff and the idea of like, okay, well, what? Am I going to try to fight this? Am I going to try to take them to some sort of, you know, civil court over this? Night court maybe? Dream court even? I don't know. We'll see what happens. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right about everything, but this is also kind of how landlords kind of can – take advantage of you. I will let you know whether or not we see any of our damage deposit back. But anyway, so landlord's coming at the same time the movers are coming, at the same time the new landlord wants to do the check-in at the other place. And this is kind of on us because we kind of wanted to, you know, we said it all can happen on the 31st. So that's the one kind of piece of anxiety that's left over. But I think that anxiety of Friday is Saturday is a great motivator for me to, like, you know, spend every moment packing boxes and getting stuff ready. I had this is a totally different conversation, which is not interesting. I'll just tell you the 30-second version, and I would encourage you not to ask follow-up questions because I will answer them.
But Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you will not be taking follow-up questions?
No, I will be. I'm for your own good, I'm saying do not ask me follow-up questions because I will be more than happy to go down this road with you, but it is not great content. But I had an old computer, a laptop that we probably bought in 2011. Ish, maybe 2012, I don't know. But it's one of those things that's still running Windows 7, which is pretty old. It's just, actually, maybe it's even a little bit older than I'm saying. Either way, it's one of those computers that's been literally gathering dust. And one time I tried to use it to watch a streaming Mariners game, and it basically collapsed under the weight of the internet. And so I booted it up last night, thinking I'll kind of try to wipe it as much as possible, get all the personal info off there as much as possible, and then donate it to one of those trustworthy nonprofits that then take it, do the final touches of totally wiping it clean, and then they'll, you know, provide it to a school or something. But then, you know me, I love dinking around with computers. So I sat down with it last night after all the packing, and I opened this thing up, and I'm like, okay, I'll wipe this and I'll wipe this drive. And I'm like, well, maybe. And I started learning how you can actually reinstall Windows, do a full reinstall of Windows on this thing that we bought forever ago. I'm like, well, maybe that would make it work faster. Then maybe we could have an extra computer. So I ended up doing that. Like, I think I was just in kind of order mode. It made me feel like I had control over something. I sat down with this old laptop, totally reinstalled Windows on it last night. Like, this is a good use of my packing time, right? I should have just driven a nail through the hard drive and sent it to the dump. Instead, I refurbished.
You could have just sent it up here, and I could have bashed it with a huge rock.
Like, oh, yeah.
Smoke detector.
So, I missed part of that. You couldn't get the battery out. Why did it have to end up being a brutal?
It was one of these,
smashing?
Like, kind of, I wouldn't say fancy ones, but like when we redid the house, we, you know, obviously went to Lowe's and bought a big bunch of smoke detectors, but they're kind of like, I don't know if the idea is that you never change the battery. You buy it, you have it for, I don't know, however many years, and then at some point it's ready, you throw it out. But I'm just saying, when do they learn it?
Yeah.
But it's not like the kind of one we grew up with where you take, you know, you get a alert and it means it needs a new battery and you change the battery. This one you can't actually change the battery. No. It's like it just lives until its usefulness is over and then you're supposed to change it. But we've got like, I don't know, probably six or seven of these around the house. one of them decided to just go bad. And it was a few weeks ago. It was sort of beeping in the middle of the night. So then I took it down and moved it. And then it was fine, it seemed. So I put it back up. Apparently, it started beeping. My mother-in-law was here watching the dog and the cat over the weekend while we were in Portland, and as was DFTB. And so anyway, things started going off. And so my mother-in-law, a.k.a. other mom, wrote us a note that said, oh, that noise really scared Rudy. It was just like a beep every, like, you know, maybe 20 or 30 seconds.
Yep.
It wasn't like going off continuously. Mm-hmm. But I mean, maybe there's somebody who's smarter than me. There's some way to take these things apart. But I spent about 5 minutes out in the backyard trying to figure out how to, like, take it apart so I could take the battery out. And then I just went, I did the math. I was like, I think these things are like $5 or $6. And then I just went Hulk smash. And I picked up a big heavy rock and I just murdered the smoke detector. And it was very cathartic.
I believe
it. And I could do that to your laptop if you... Yeah, it really was. I smote it.
God, and then, God, steady my hand if it be your will.
First, I was like, I will sacrifice my best smoke detector. And then a burning bush said, nah, swerve on that, bro. But then I smote it anyway just for fun. But actually, sure. No, that's a – you don't get that. You don't get that joy very often. Big, heavy rock smashing a piece of electronics. It was a really nice feeling.
I believe it, especially an annoying piece of electronics.
So let me know if that laptop doesn't straighten up.
Okay.
I'll steal it from the clutches of Goodwill or whomever else, and I'll happily just bash the crap out of it.
I'll just play. If it doesn't work right, I'll just play this part of the podcast for it. That'll straighten that shit right out.
Absolutely. Okay, we got to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we've got top stories. We're going to thank some donors of the day. We're going to talk about this giant piece of space junk that may or may not hit me. I feel like there's a good chance it's going to hit me. So we'll do all of that. Oh, and some listener content. I actually saw, Andrew, a note from a listener. I didn't listen to the file, but somebody wrote us a song, I guess, or a song about the show.
Yeah, I got a couple... Got a couple of musical entries in the old, people are recording themselves and emailing us stuff. I'm excited to lay this stuff out for you.
It's a very creative bunch. So anyway, we'll do all that when we come back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. So takes me back.
I know. I've been listening. Veeves and I have been listening to a lot of REM while we're packing. It's music that it just seems like it's good. It's good stuff to pack to. But also, I think it started because, you know, Scott Aukerman of Comedy Bang Bang.
Yep, Comedy Bang Bang.
And his pal Adam. Is it Adam Scott? Yeah, Adam Scott of like Parks and Rec. They have the
U2 podcast, right?
Yes, Are You Talking U2 to Me? And they talked about each U2 album in order in their just patentedly ridiculous way. And then they ran out of albums, so now they have a podcast called Are You Talking REM, which is just just so wonderful. I love how horrible that name of a podcast is. So we were listening to some of that, but honestly, you listen to some of it, and as much as I love those guys, it makes you just want to turn them off and listen to REM, which is what we did.
Yeah, I wouldn't even – usually if you asked me, okay, top 5 bands or maybe top 10 bands, I don't think REM would even enter my top 10, and yet starting with – Green up until, I don't know, whatever the, like maybe a couple of albums ago, I knew every REM album front to back, like Automatic for the People, Green. What's the one that has Crush with Eyeliner? on it. It was kind of a
Was that one green? Is that not green? I can't recall. I would have been. There was a time when I could have told you every song on every album and every album in order. I can't recall. But Out of Time would be in there as well.
Yeah, Out of Time, Automatic for the People, Monster.
Yeah, okay.
Monster I was big on. And like
New Adventures in Lo-Fi. I wasn't huge on Monster, but the one that came after it. Do you remember that New Adventures in Lo-Fi? Did you ever have that one?
I'm sure that I'm looking at some of the track listings now. Oh yeah, totally. I like when just you playing that REM song, it makes me really want to just go dig. Well, I don't have any CDs anymore, but you know what I mean? Just like listen to a bunch of REM. I don't know why I don't think of it as maybe because it I don't know why I turn my back on REM publicly, or I don't think of them as one of my favorite bands when I've listened to so much REM in my life and quite enjoyed it.
I think I go through phases of things, and even phases where I become somewhat embarrassed, but maybe shy about my like of something. And I think I did that with REM. I think I had some friends in New Hampshire. I know I had one friend in New Hampshire. I think that was the band that, like, we would cook together a lot, but he just would not tolerate REM in a way that I found kind of funny. Yeah. And so I think that kind of,
I can understand that though. If you don't like Michael Stipe's voice, this is not the band for you.
And he's like a real jazz man. This is Josh. Mm-hmm. You know my friend Josh. You've met him before.
Oh, I know Josh.
He doesn't go. He's not going to put up with REM. He needs to be listening to like some jazz from the 60s.
He is not the kind of guy who's going to be like, hey, could you put on Shiny Happy People?
Right. Exactly. Everybody's really got an imitation of Josh.
Just want to groove out. And here's some Shiny Happy People. Not his vibe.
That's not his vibe, but not a bad imitation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How about this real quick? Actually, you know what? Let's do
I love it. What are we doing?
we're gonna do this one over Shiny Happy People.
Oh, great. Do you want me to – you got it there?
Oh, yeah. Why don't you do it from down there so that the audio levels are ideal.
Okay, cool. Let's start with it hot. How do you feel about that?
I'm just waiting for it to kick in.
Okay.
Here we go. Guess who I get to see this weekend? My family. I don't know why that turned into Bruce Chandler.
I don't know. What happened?
I just said, here we go.
But you were right. That's exactly where they say it, right?
I think so. I mean, I'm off by a half a second because of the delay down the line. It kills me, by the way. It kills me when we play music on the show. You're playing it in Seattle. I'm in Bellingham. I want to sing along, but I know that I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not in time with the music, and it'll just be weird for everyone, so I have to stifle it. Let's thank some shiny, happy people today, a.k.a. our donors of the day. These are generous, supportive, thoughtful folks who donated during the TBTL-a-thon, and those donations make the show possible. I'm talking about Marissa Uterberg of Cleveland, Ohio. I know that you know how to pronounce everyone from Cleveland's last name. Is that how I pronounce Marissa's last name?
Let me call it up. Yeah. It's Marissa Worcester of Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh.
Hey-o.
Got it. Perfect. Yeah. I like that we're expanding that joke out of Massachusetts. I think it's high time.
I don't
that joke jump the state borders of Massachusetts.
I don't have that many jokes. So when I find one that I got a chuckle once, I am going to use that guy.
Oh, I'm with you. I am so with you. I was half listening to when we were driving back from Portland, we had Howard Stern on, and I was sort of Carrie was driving, so I was dozing in and out of sleep, and I came to just in time to hear somebody on the show say, yeah, he just called me up and then just yelled "Go Browns" into the phone and hung up. And I was like, I got to figure out where that audio is, and I got to like start using it for Andrew. I do not still even know what the context was.
Well, we have a bunch of people who are now have kind of post Samson and Delilah depression now that we're getting very close to solving the mystery of that. Maybe the mystery solvers can find that audio for us.
Yeah. That's kind of a postpartum depression, like you said, mm-hmm. when when the mystery of an old Christian rap song from the 80s, when we finally hear it, it's going to be bittersweet. I know
it's going to close. It's going to be the end of a chapter, certainly.
Let's also thank Kelly Welch. Oh, excuse me. Yes, that's right. Of Vancouver, Washington. Kelly Welch. I drove through Kelly's town today with Carrie. Beautiful Vancouver, Washington. I highly recommend the Elbow Room. It's so weird. Vancouver, Washington is a small town. It's not a large place. It's right across the river from Portland. If you're from the East Coast and you're not aware of the geography out here. But it's on the Washington State side of the border. And one time, Carrie and I were driving back, and I don't know why we stopped over in Vancouver. It's like 5 minutes from Portland. But we did, and we ended up at this dive bar called the Elbow Room. And it was just delighted me to no end. Had a bunch of older folks in there. Somebody had brought in food in a chafing dish on like a Sunday afternoon. Always the mark of a great bar.
Yeah.
And it was just wonderful. And now every time I take a Lyft or do something in Portland and the person driving or somebody I encounter says, I'm from Vancouver, I say, oh, have you ever been to the Elbow Room? They always say, never heard of it.
Oh.
And I'm like, did I Jack Nicholson in The Shining this place? Did I create it with my mind? Because it's not like Vancouver's a huge place where, like it's like the one little dive bar in downtown. It would be like everybody should know about it and nobody knows about it. It makes me wonder if it even ever really existed.
Well, I don't know if this will help you or not, but I just looked it up online and Google says, you've never been there, Luke. You've
or,
never been there.
I've always been
mm-hmm.
there. That's the problem. Let's also say thanks to Mary Devlin of Carlsbad, California, home of Legoland USA. I know you knew that, Andrew. I know you're a big Lego head. Actually, were you a big Lego head as a kid?
No. My parents got me lock blocks.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We've talked about this.
I still have scars from it. When I was a little kid, lock blocks were like the type, they were like big Legos, you know, the kind that have they're just a lot bigger for smaller hands and smaller brains. And we had Lock Block brand. I don't know if Lego at the time made the larger sized Legos. But then as I got older and all my friends moved on to the small Legos, my parents stuck with the Lock Block brand, which seemed to be pretty good. I think they had motorized stuff pretty early on. You might even make the argument that they might have even been better. I don't know. I know Lego is hugely popular now. But the thing is, Lego was the brand you wanted to have. You didn't want to have a brand that was non-compatible with your friends, even if some people could make the argument that maybe Lock Blocks were better, which I think in 2018... nobody would make that argument.
Yeah. I'm sure last time we talked about Legos, I talked about this. I just didn't have the patience for it, which doesn't make me feel great about, you know, my childhood. I feel like it's a sort of a cerebral exercise in a way.
Hmm.
And I just wasn't a Lego kid. I wanted to be a Lego kid, but frankly, I just got bored with it.
Hmm.
Anyway, Katie Disharoon of Seattle, Washington, also supported today's show. Marissa, Kelly, Mary, and Katie. Thank you so much for making TBTL possible. Sounds like you've got a thought on that.
Well, I was just going to add, I mean, I'm just a little bummed. I was hoping we'd get one more REM song out of this segment, but maybe we'll go out, because now I'm looking at what the next songs are. How long can you extend the thank you for supporting us segment is what I want to know, because I had Monty got a raw deal queued up here.
Easily. I mean, first of all, how about the fact that we have a Mary and a Kate? All we need is an Ashley on this list, and we've got the Olsen twins covered.
See? That's good content right there.
We've got half an episode of Full House right there.
Two and a half Full Houses, which is one of my favorite Chuck Lorre shows. All right, I'll play Monty Got a Raw Deal another time, because we're still far away from the end of this song.
Oh, I can spin some more radio gold out of these names.
I feel like that's irresponsible at this point.
I can also just start rethanking the wrong donors of the day like I did. We can make another draw from David Becker's account if we have to.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All sorry, right. buddy.
Sorry. The show's on you.
Is this going to be Monty's Got a Raw Deal next?
I thought you were going to hit the top story and it was going to be like real radio.
I gave up on that long ago, my friend.
No, I'm saving
long ago.
Monty got a raw deal. We'll go out with that unless we come up with a better idea or forget that we had this conversation. Anything is possible.
All right. Absolutely.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, top story coming to us from the New York Times today. A Chinese space station will fall to Earth soon. You'll probably be fine. Sometime in the next week, a 9.5-ton Chinese space station expected to come hurtling back to Earth. It's called Tiangong 1, which means heavenly in, I believe, Mandarin. It's been floating around up in space for many years. It's no longer being used by the Chinese Space Administration, but it is going to fall back to Earth sometime in the next few weeks, and they think that it's going to fall harmlessly somewhere in the ocean or out in the wilderness. But one of the things they point out in this article is that the reason these things are actually really hard to predict is because in the matter of a half hour difference, so as it comes back into the atmosphere, depending on the exact angle it hits the atmosphere at, that slows it down. That, you know, if it hits a thicker part of the atmosphere or if it's coming in at an angle that impedes it in some way atmospherically, if you're off by a half hour, the Earth has rotated halfway around, like you're on the other side of the Earth a half hour later. And in fact, they thought that, remember Skylab? You're a little bit younger than me, and I'm almost too young for Skylab, 1979. Do you remember any of this?
I know of it. I've heard the term Skylab, but I don't remember experiencing the news.
Skylab, it was 1979, so you know you would have been pretty young for it. Mm-hmm. I think we had old National Geographics that were about Skylab that were just in the house probably in the mid-80s. But yeah, Skylab was supposed to fall in the ocean, and it came in a half hour later than it was expected to, and it ended up crashing in the Australian desert. So Tiangong 1 could kind of land anywhere. I was looking at the regions of where it's likely to crash. A lot of it is the ocean, but it's also, let's just say, up to like Central Oregon is one of the bands. Mm. Is latitude the latitude and longitude? Which one's latitude? Which one's longitude?
I think that latitude is the rule that we never ask each other questions we don't know the answer to on the show. Latitude is the angular distance
latitude
of a place north or south of the Earth's equator. So that would mean, I guess.
I don't know how that doesn't help me, but I mean, I know you just read the description. I don't know why my brain can't process that.
So it sounds like latitude. What I'm trying to do is avoid any kind of culpability myself. It sounds like latitude runs east. The Earth faces east,
right? Oh, latitudes
east,
are fat, right? Lat, fat. So isn't it? Yeah, it's east. I think latitudes are east west. So okay. It's expected to fall to Earth around mid March, and according to the scientists who track this, it's most likely to fall within two narrow bands circling the globe, marked in yellow, which I'm looking at this map on the New York Times website. And those yellow bands, one of them goes up into Central Oregon, which to me is like, yeah, well, I mean, Central Oregon, North Washington State, it's not a far stretch to think this thing is probably coming for me.
Yeah, for they you. That's what I like about this. It reminds me a little bit. I'm talking to myself here. Don't put this in a way that sounds cruel or mean, but it reminds me a little bit of when you and I got into a little bit of a tiff about voting. This is years ago, and I'm not holding you to it. I assume that you
evolved
slightly on it.
What are the chances that I'm going to cast the winning vote, the deciding vote, right?
Like, yeah, you were kind of like talking about whether or not it's important to vote. This is a while back now. I think this would have been 2012. No. Whatever, 14, who cares? And you were kind of saying, well, I know it's vain, but it's kind of like, I care if I'm the one who casts the winning vote. It's very much like, will this space junk land in the Pacific Northwest or even possibly in Bellingham specifically? No, it's whether or not it lands on Luke Burbank. Don't you also have a theory about that? Like, on an airplane, you think you'll survive an airplane crash?
Yes. I mean, I'm a narcissist. I don't think this is even...
I'm not trying to be mean. I promise.
And if you want confirmation of that, talk to one Carrie Beth Bolden Burbank.
That's my wife.
who once just sent me a link to some kind of like web study of what a narcissist is. Maybe not the most productive way for us to discuss disagreements about this and that. But the very idea that I think I'm going to be the only person to survive the plane crash, and I feel like there's about an 80% chance this space station is going to land on me. Like in a Coen Brothers-esque, slightly comma tragic turn. It's like I'm going to be in my yard. I'm going to look up into the sky as this 9.5-ton Chinese space station falls on Bellingham, on Alabama Hill, on my backyard, on me.
And if it's Coen Brothers-y, it's going to be like Deus Ex Machina, right? Like it's going to have nothing to do with the plot. Like you're going to be embroiled in something completely different. You know, you'll be somebody's trying to get you, or you're trying to get somebody. There's a lot of running around. There's a lot of quipping, not the toothbrush, but the joking thing. Then suddenly, boom, it ends because space junk fell on you.
But what will have happened is that will have been put that. That ball will have started rolling down a kind of Rube Goldberg type of scenario long ago. In other words, I will have done something. I will be texting my mistress, which that text bounces off of a satellite. Mm. And then that satellite adjusts its orbit. I know this isn't really how satellites work, but just go with me. I will have unwittingly put the whole thing in motion through some bad behavior on my part or some thoughtlessness. Like, I'm behind a guy in traffic. I beep at him a bunch because he's driving too slow. He texts his wife, God, there's just this real jerk behind me in traffic. That text causes that satellite to move imperceptibly, which changes that satellite's orbit, which causes that satellite to bump the Chinese space station. So instead of falling into the Pacific Ocean, it's now put on a path towards Bellingham, Washington. You following me?
And then George Clooney does something.
Yeah, and he gets an Oscar nomination.
Yeah, right.
Because he's like a bummed out version of George Clooney. Yeah. So anyway, I guess I have until Friday, everyone. So you better enjoy me while you got me.
So how big is the how big is the swath again? So it can.
Well, it's hard to. I mean, again, that's the thing. The Earth is rotating pretty fast, and a lot of it depends on, you know, little things like what angle does it come into the Earth's atmosphere at. They say that the odds you will be struck. And it's weird. They write the probability, Luke Burbank, that you will be struck by Tiangong 1 is about 1 million times smaller than the odds of winning the Powerball jackpot.
Think about the Powerball, though.
I also feel
though,
like I'm going to win the Powerball every time I buy one of those tickets. So.
Yeah, but that you have to opt into, you know, and I don't know if you've been opting into that. Do you buy the big lotto tickets?
I absolutely do when I remember. We've talked about this on the show before. I call it walking around with a little sunshine in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not going to win, but for a few days or even a few hours, you think, I don't know, I could win. And that experience of that kind of little bit of just, anticipation, that hope is in and of itself worth the $5 to me.
Yeah, I don't do it, but mostly because I'm not a good like local news consumer, and I feel like that's where you are alerted that something big is happening. Like, is there something big? Is there any sense of when something big is happening? I guess it's when the pot just kind of gets bigger and bigger, right? Where are we with any kind of super lotto situation right now? Is it even called the super lotto anymore?
It's not. It's the power. It's
oh, right.
The
you
power
just said
ball.
That. Right. Okay. So
and
what's going on
it,
with power?
It only gets on my radar when. Like, nobody's won it for, I don't know, a few weeks or a month, and it starts to get really big. And then you're right. You're in the airport, and you see CNN. It's muted, but it's, like, people lining up for Powerball. You just see, like, people at, like, a frozen landscape mini-mart in Wisconsin, and people are lining up for Powerball. And then you're like, oh, I guess that's a thing. I should go get a couple of those tickets. And I, you know, if I remember to, I do.
According to the Daily Advertiser, which I recently learned has auto videos pop up with audio when you click on it. Check your tickets. You may already be a millionaire if you purchased a Powerball ticket for last night's drawing in Lafayette. Where's Lafayette?
Lafayette? That sounds like that would either be in Louisiana or Indiana? Something that ends in Anna.
Yes, I think it is. I think it's Lafayette Elementary School here in Seattle, Washington, which is what Google is
beautiful.
Telling me.
By the way, there are apparently things falling back to Earth all the time. according to scientists. As these things come flying back to Earth, the objects compress the air beneath them, generating intense heat up to 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. The heat and pressure can cause the objects to break apart, melt, and vaporize, leaving little left when they reach the Earth's surface. Only one person has ever been killed, is known to have been killed by falling space junk. It's Lottie Williams of Oklahoma, a person who was struck. Wait, did I say killed?
I think you said killed. Yeah.
Yeah, no, not even killed, just even hit. Lottie Williams was struck without injury by a small chunk of rocket booster in 1997. Struck without injury.
Wow. I was.
That's amazing.
Yeah, there is. I think I saw a headline when you sent this to me. I was Googling around a little bit. I think because I had the same question. Has anybody ever been hit or killed by this? And I saw that it might have been in Uzbekistan. Maybe last year or the year before, somebody was hit and killed by space junk. But apparently they were part of a I put an asterisk next to that because they were part of a crew that helped a launch, or they were cleaning up after a launch, and a few hours later something came down. So I feel like if you're actually part of the launch, that's not the randomness that we're talking about here.
Right. I find it amazing that Lottie Williams of Oklahoma was struck without injury by a chunk of rocket booster. You'd think that would injure you. Rocket booster, almost up in space or way high up in the atmosphere, comes back down, hits you, and you're just like, yeah, I'll walk that off.
Mm-hmm.
Lottie Williams sounds like a tough son of a bitch.
That would be fun. It's not, I mean, I would pick winning the lotto if it was like, hey, you win whatever, X, is it billions of dollars in the Powerball?
Not billions. Okay. Well, I mean, it could, I guess hypothetically it could.
Yeah, sure.
But it's usually in the like 500 million.
Okay, let's say 500 million. I would take that over getting hit and surviving space junk, but that would be not a bad second place. Like, that's a good story to dine out on for a while.
Yeah. I'm reading up on Lottie Williams. Lottie Williams was strolling through a park in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when she saw a flash of light resembling a meteor. A short while later, she was struck on the shoulder by a piece of metal, apparently from a disintegrating rocket.
Hmm.
Although the fragment, which measured 6 inches long, was never positively identified as having come from a rocket, NASA confirmed the timing and location of the incident were consistent with the re-entry and breakup of a second-stage Delta rocket. Williams was not injured. She was struck a glancing blow, and the debris was relatively light and probably traveling at low velocity. It was also subject to wind currents. So I guess I have nothing to be worried about, Andrew.
I wonder if she got to keep it. I'll bet you she didn't. I'll bet that's the real son of a gun about that story.
I didn't know this either. Somebody living in Esperance, Australia, recovered some of the Skylab wreckage from the roof of their house and raced to California, where the San Francisco Examiner was offering a prize of $10,000, which would be $30,000 in today's money, to the first person who could deliver a piece of the space station to its newsroom.
Huh.
I am full of dazzling details today, Andrew.
Yeah, you are.
You're welcome.
All right, I know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says, sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right. We got some emails. We got some V-mails. We got some people writing some original art pieces related to TBTL.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this. I don't know if it's something in the water. It's in the water.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on, but we got several little pieces of, I don't know, we'll just call them fan art. if you don't mind. As a matter of fact, one of them did identify it. Let's just start with this one. This is from listener Ryan, who says, I boop-booped this together for y'all. Just doinking around on my boop-boop this weekend. Consider this fan art. And I'm going to tell you, Luke, this is 23 seconds of what I consider to be absolute gold. I love this. Take a listen. Boop, boop, boop. Bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop. Boop, boop, boop. Beep, beep, boop, boop. Boops. Boop, boop. Boop, boop, boop. Nope. Boop, boop, boop. Nope. Bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop.
How great is that? The new Childish Gambino? That's a fire track.
I love it. I love it so much. I mean, it's a little, it makes me a little, I don't know, it's not sad. You know, it's contemplative, but that's okay. Sometimes we need to slow things down a little bit.
I think that's a legit catchy song.
I know. Using a cough. As a matter of fact, I don't have the email here, but I wrote back to Ryan immediately. I got that over the weekend. I was like, I love this damn thing. And Ryan said, yeah, if we ever want to ask him for anything, he's happy to do it. He's just practicing his music skills. And he says, with Linfam's marsupial gurgle site, where all the clips of us are collected by Lin himself, he says it makes it pretty easy. So anyway, I don't know, keep them coming. I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do, Ryan. You've done enough. I don't want to add pressure to you, but I'm in love with that. Do you want to hear another song?
I do. Yes, I do.
This is from Butt. Do you have a butt?
No, I'm thinking on this list will be this song that Carolyn did, which I haven't listened to yet, but I just saw the subject line, Lucal's for sale.
That's exactly right. And says, you know how she says, whenever Luke talks about his mother singing Lucal's Magookles for sale, because that's what your mom's saying, right? Lucal's Magookles for sale. It always sounds like a barbershop song to me. I don't know how to spell it, but I know how to sing it, maybe because I sing in a barbershop quartet and a chorus. So here's my version of what it might sound like. This is me singing all the parts. And again, this is from Carolyn in Colchester, Vermont. Let's take a listen to this.
Oh, Lucal's Magookles.
Not bad. I mean, that's short.
Beautiful.
It's to the point.
That's actually not far off. I mean, my mom would do more like seven part harmony, but that's just because she's, you know,
sure,
she's a stickler for her harmonies. That is so gorgeous and really cool. And I'm going to legit send that to my mom. Actually, you know what I'll probably do? I just saw my mom this weekend. What I'm probably going to do is download that to my phone, and next family get together, I'm going to play that for my mom, and she will crack up.
Oh, nice. Nice. Will
so
she feel,
thank you.
Will she feel competition, though? That's the thing I'm a little bit worried about.
My mom, to her credit, does not see the world that way. My mom is a real character, and there are times when I, you know, kind of feel maybe a little exasperated with her, but I will give her credit. She takes everything in stride. Like yesterday, okay, so I was in Portland doing Livewire. Carrie was down there because we were also going to be visiting with family. My whole family kind of just about descended on Portland because my sister Liz has a store in Portland called Button, which I will happily just give a free plug to here. It's a consignment store, but like it's really good stuff. She's like an impeccable sense of style. So it's women's clothing, and they expanded the store. There was like a bike shop next to them, and then they took over that bike shop's old space. So for the last, like, I don't know, a couple weeks, she and her husband and then my dad were like furiously working around the clock to kind of like remodel and build out this new space for her store. So there was a big grand reopening on Sunday, and we all went down there, which was really fun. But my sister and my brother-in-law worked for like, no joke, 2 days straight with no sleep. Because they were trying to get, it had to be done by whatever, 10 a.m. on Sunday morning, because that's when people were going to start showing up. And you know how those projects are. They just always take more time than you think. Mm-hmm. So my brother-in-law, when this was all done, had gone back to their house. They live like a block from the store, and he was sleeping, finally getting some sleep, much needed sleep. So let's say it's like 9 in the morning and he's been asleep for like an hour or two. My mom goes over to their house, and for reasons that I still don't really understand, she decides as she's kind of in their house, she doesn't realize my brother-in-law's there, and she's singing the song Blackbird by the Beatles at the top of her lungs. Just wandering around my sister's house singing Blackbird as loud as she can. and then decides to go upstairs to their bedroom for God knows what, and then wanders upstairs singing Blackbird, only to realize, oh, no, my son-in-law is trying to sleep in this room where I'm now singing Blackbird at the top of my lungs.
And also Blackbird, not a song that you need to sing at the top of your lungs, you know? It wasn't like Revolution, you know?
Right.
It's just Blackbird. It's absolutely delicate. Let it breathe.
But so I said to my mom when I heard this story, I was like, oh, let me guess. So that brother-in-law, the one she woke up, was named Jason. I was like, let me guess, Mom, were you wearing Josh's sunglasses? Because that's another story where, like, she was at my sister Liz's house once, and she's wearing someone's jacket, like, because she wants to sit on the front porch, and she finds one of my other brother-in-law's sunglasses in the pocket, like nice sunglasses that he really liked. And she, like, is wearing the sunglasses for some reason. But then I feel like she puts the sunglasses – there was some mix-up where she puts the sunglasses in, like, her jacket afterwards. She somehow inadvertently, like, steals my sister Sarah's husband's sunglasses or puts them in a place where no one knows where they are. And, again, peace and love. My mom, oh, I just love her so much. But it's like only she – you turn her loose in that house for 8 minutes, she's going to do damage. She's going to wake someone up. She's going to lose someone's sunglasses. And it's almost always seems to land not on like a space station hitting me. This stuff seems to land heaviest on her son-in-laws, the people who have like they're not even blood relatives. And they – you know what I mean? It's like it's one thing if she does something kooky and it affects Sarah or Liz. But if it's Josh or Jason – I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying these are long-suffering – I got great brothers-in-law, but they are long-suffering dudes. But so I said this to my mom. I was like, let me guess. Did you have Josh's sunglasses on? Which was kind of a snarky comment. She LOL'd so hard at the idea of wearing one son-in-law's sunglasses while she's inadvertently waking the other one up. So all that to say, my mom does a lot of wacky stuff, but when you call her out on it, her reaction is always just to laugh. She doesn't get – so I don't think she feels threatened by the Lucals Magookals barbershop song that Carolyn in Vermont did. I'm hurt by the fact that Carolyn in Vermont did not, when she heard I was coming to Vermont, invite me out for a beer or some fancy cheese or something.
Especially since, as far as I see it, Carolyn is your new mom now, right?
Oh, Lucals Magookals for sale.
That's your new mom.
Think about how great that would be for a kid. If you had a mom who could sing that well and in that sort of harmonious a fashion, I feel like that puts you on the path for a healthy childhood. You feel loved. You feel seen. You feel supported harmonically.
Maybe. Or, I mean, it could be a Bob's Burger situation. Of course, I think the parents on Bob's Burgers are really good parents.
What would a Bob's Burger situation mean?
Well, you know, like sometimes, what is the mom's name? I'm blanking on her name, which is ridiculous.
Me
I
too.
Watch this show all the time. But
Lois? No, that's the mom in Family Guy, sorry.
Lois. That's not even my thing. We're morphing. Anyways, you know, she loves the song and the dance so much that sometimes her love of it will overshadow her children or possibly make her lose focus of what is the most important thing because she becomes center stage.
Mm.
Anyway.
Yeah, that definitely happened on Saturday night too at my sister's house because they do have a karaoke machine and Nelly.
Oh, what's her song? Did she do the romantic song she does for your dad sometimes?
She was on a tight time window because they had to get my nephews back to my other sister's house. So she only had time to throw down Good Morning Heartache by Billie Holiday, which I do think is her best song. And it's actually kind of a hard song to sing, and she really nails it. And then she tried to do Diana Ross. Who was with the Supremes? That's Diana Ross,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I think she tried to do a Diana Ross song, and it was harder than she thought it was.
Baby Love,
like it wasn't Baby Love. Maybe it was Baby Love. Anyway, she had a strong opening song. She had a little bit more trouble on her second song, but she did not do "I Got You, Babe," which she forced my dad to do with her.
Right.
Or "My Guy," she does a song. Is it? Let's see. Yeah, she does My Guy. She does My Guy, and she says, this song is for your dad. We're like, yeah.
I hope.
I know, exactly. Is it for Michael Landon again? Is it, Mom, do you love Michael Landon more than you love Daddy?
Is that something that you guys had to work through as a family? Yeah.
Well, yeah, because we were kids. She'll definitely mess with some Highway to Heaven, but she was real Little House on the Prairie fan.
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't really, we had a TV, but it was like a black and white TV that was in a closet most of the time. And it would occasionally be brought out for like special occasions, like probably a re-election of Ronald Reagan in like 1984 or other momentous events or Little House on the Prairie. My mom would break that TV out, watch Little House and cry at the end of every episode. And then we would shriek, You love Michael Landon more than you love Daddy.
Michael Landon in that show especially, but generally speaking, but in that show especially, very lovable.
I mean, of course. I mean, to be honest with you, the thing was basically a hagiography. I mean, he directed it. I don't think he wrote the episodes, but he was heavily influencing, you know, what happened. He was the director of many episodes of Little House on the Prairie, and Pa was always the hero. Pa was just, I mean, Pa was pure in every sense of the word. He was always on the side of justice. I remember one time when they moved to the big city, they moved to, I think it's Mankato, and they're working or they're living in some kind of a, like a rooming house or like a kind of a motel or a hotel, I guess, of sorts. And the mom, Ma Ingalls, she's got to do the dishes in the kitchen of this kind of restaurant/hotel. And Pa is, she's very, feeling very stressed out about things. And Pa says to her, "Why don't you let those dishes dry themselves? And we're going to go, I forget what, have sex or something? I don't know." He just basically tells her, like, "Don't you worry about drying those dishes." I think her name was Caroline in the show. And that was when I
thought, unlike your new mom.
Exactly. I was like, yeah, dishes will dry themselves if you just leave them out. That was a big breakthrough for me as a kid.
Yeah, we always had to dry. You know, me and my sister had to wash dishes, and one of us would be the washer and one would be the dryer, which is something that we don't really deal with in this day and age. We have a drying rack. Like, unless that drying rack is full and there's no more room on any of the counters to spread out a towel and then set the stuff on to dry, you don't. It's not a two-person job. But, yeah, we used to fight over who had to wash and who had to dry. It may be that I don't know about as a kid, but I got to say, if I was given that task today, I would take washing over drying any day. What about you?
No, opposite.
I mean, that seems to make more sense. That makes more sense. But there's something about drying. Certain things don't dry that well. I hate the feel of a towel. I'm a completist, you know? And if I got that soap wand, which is how I do my dishes, and a bunch of hot water, I know that I can wash those dishes completely to my satisfaction. But when you're sitting there holding a towel that started off dry, but now you're like halfway through the dinner dishes, the towel itself is wet. You're kind of moving the moisture around on the object at this point. It's very dissatisfying.
Well, it's a trust issue. You've got to trust, I think, that the person who's washing the dishes is washing them sufficiently.
Yeah, that's the other thing. And using hot
enough
water.
And that's probably also what bugs you. Is like you don't want to be at the south end of a northbound questionable dishwasher.
No, I don't.
Where they're just handing you stuff that still has gunk on it. That's a bad feeling.
It is. Here's a little PSA for everybody. You know, and this sounds like I'm throwing Genevieve under the bus. And if I am, I apologize because I honestly don't mean to. I do most of the dishes in the house. I enjoy doing dishes. It's fine. But every now and then, like, Genevieve has been trying to eat a little bit more healthily, so she's been kind of cooking her own meals. And when she does that, she, tries to make sure that I'm not doing a bunch of dishes for stuff that I, you know, kind of had nothing to do with, which I appreciate. Right. But one thing that I had to mention to her the other day, which sounds like a real, like, I don't know, it's hard not to sound like condescending or like an asshole, but I had to kind of say, like, but when you're washing the pans, remember that, like, grease gets on the part that the food wasn't necessarily in as well. And I feel like that is something that some people forget. Like, if you put, you know, sure, you're washing a glass, and the milk was inside the glass, but when you're washing the glass, you also have to clean the outside of the glass because fingerprints were there. And maybe if you were eating chicken, it would be greasy fingerprints, and your mouth was on the outside of it. And if you're using a pan, yeah, the food was on the inside of the pan, but also a lot of grease from sitting in the sink and stuff got on the outside of the pan as well. So the more you know.
The last – the outside of the dish is the last pass for me. So it's like you get the inside – and you get that all done, and then you go around the outside, which I will admit I'm not as maybe as meticulous about the outside, because you're not going to be drinking from the outside of a cup, but you don't want it to have fingerprints on it. It's at the very least worth a quick once over.
Certainly, and your lips are definitely going to be on the top outside of the cup for sure. I actually think I might do it differently. Not that this is interesting, but I think I might start with the outside of things. Maybe because in my brain I'm thinking, well, if the heavy lifting, if most of the gunk is on the inside, don't mess up your sponge first. Use your relatively clean sponge to clean the outside, then go in there. But anyway.
Interesting.
Can I, before time runs out here, and I got to say, I kind of don't want to do this, but I guess I should. And I think you probably know what's coming here because I saw that you were copying on this email as well. But while we're playing, audio that, folks made for us, should I play this mashup that our friend and listener Lynn made of us trying to say Cthulhu on the show last week?
I haven't listened to it. Sure. Why not?
Okay. It's like 25 seconds or something. Let's see if we can get through all 25 seconds. If we can't, though, have your buzzer ready. When I hear your buzzer, I will
cease and
desist. Okay, while you get that ready, I'll get this started.
Yeah, okay,
Cthulhu. Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Clohue.
Clohue.
Clohue. Clohue.
Clohue.
Clohue.
Cthulhu.
Clohue.
Clohue.
Clohue. Cthulhu.
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 Cthulhu. Really, the center did not hold on that. By the end.
No, it did. I liked it.
I just want to hug this show and never let it go.
I thought it was actually more listenable than I was expecting it.
I mean, on me, my last two pronunciations were just grunted noises. But it has a rhythm to
Thanks,
it. Lynn throws these things together and they do end up having their own rhythm, don't they?
Maybe like Lynn and that guy, is it Ryan, who made the other one? Maybe they can collaborate like the Neptunes.
Yes. Actually, can we listen to that just one more time? Did we only listen to the
blue
bloop one time?
I like
time?
The beat.
Me too. Let's listen to it again.
I like the beat.
Boop, boop, boop.
Bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop.
Boop, boop, boop.
Beep, beep, boop, boop. Boops.
Boop, boop.
Boop, boop, boop.
Nope.
Boop, boop, boop.
Nope.
Bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop.
I like your nope in there, too.
I love it so much. I love it. Your ha-ha. That's a very like, love in this club.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also a little bit like Big Chuck and Little John as well. So it's a combination of two things that we love.
Excellente. All right. I did not write down even one show title. By the way, we should talk about this tomorrow in the email section. Listener Bill in Toronto just sent us the listing. You know me and my Redfin. Guess what house is on Redfin in L.A.? Mark Maron's.
Oh, that's news.
It's for sale.
Because that's kind of an iconic place now. That's with his garage.
Well, it is now. And then first of all, it's a cool house. Second of all, it's got all kinds of pictures of his studio. Now, so it's like the question is, do we buy Mark Maron's house and do I start doing the show from there so as to hopefully become as popular as WTF?
That sounds like a very reasonable course of action.
I think so.
I would go for
it. By the way, do you have $749,000 I can borrow?
Not all of it. I'd have to move some things around probably a little bit. Okay. But by the end of the week, probably.
Oh, good. Perfect. Well, that'll be fine then.
I'll
make some calls.
I'm worried that Money Got a Raw Deal is too... Is it too sad? Is it too slow?
I don't even know what that song actually sounds like.
Can we get a little sample of it and you tell me? If you want to go out on something happier, REM has plenty of more upbeat stuff. This is off of, Automatic for the People, which is... The whole thing has a pretty, By the way, it has a pretty melancholy feel to it. Night Swimming came on. We're trying to listen to the albums in order, but when you get to the end of an album on Spotify, it starts just creating a radio station based on whatever album you were listening to, so we're kind of catching some random REM songs. I'm going to say something here that is going to be, I think, maybe controversial, and something that I think I felt this my entire fandom and have never admitted it out loud. I don't like Night Swimming. I don't think that's a very good song. I think it's overly dramatic, or it's melodramatic.
I think I like it. I mean, I think I like it. But I don't know if I like – I don't know if it's just nostalgic for me. Like if I just like it because it reminds me of being in high school and driving my Honda Civic.
And I don't know if
it's because
beloved.
It's a good song.
And I don't know if it's beloved or not. But this weekend when I heard that, I was like, you know what? If I'm being honest with you, Andrew, I don't think I like this song. I kind of said it like that because I don't want anybody to overhear me.
I think I like singing it because it's such a – it is so overly earnest.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's the kind of thing that makes its way into podcasts and jokes that are made by people of about our age with about our kind of pop culture interests because of how – because of how hopelessly earnest it is. Night swimming deserves a quiet night. It's like so – it's so dopey that it's like – it's going to make somebody laugh at its earnestness if it's brought up in the right – you know, in the right moment. But I was going to say I'm actually putting together – what about – well, you can put this this other song you're talking about. We could always go with an upbeat number like a What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
Sure. You're going to go for Monster, right? Is that Monster?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's because I was trying to think of, like, other than Shiny Happy People, what are some reliably, I mean, Stand?
Right.
Like, what are some reliably upbeat REM numbers? There aren't a ton of
them. I mean, well, believe it or not, I'm not going to go into this right now, but even those, I'm just going to play you some samples. Like, even Life's Rich Pageant, which is that's pretty early on, right? Like, let's go with even Murmur. They're early stuff, even though it's not, come on. You know I'm talking about the REM. Oh, it's spelled M-U-R-M-U-R. Is that how you spell murmur? Anyway.
I believe so.
Yeah. Like, you know, like the very first song off of Murmur, which is like their first full-length album, is Radio for Europe, which isn't exactly it's like funny. Yeah, they have this reputation for being kind of morose, but actually the instrumentation is kind of poppy.
I think it's because Michael Stipe, even on an upbeat song, he has a mournfulness in his voice. Even Radio Free Europe. It's all still kind of a little downbeat, even if he's singing, you know, with enthusiasm.
You know what we should do? Why don't we start a podcast all about REM and how we feel about it and kind of talk about each album?
Why don't we start a podcast about Adam Scott and Scott Aukerman's podcast about REM?
I think that makes sense. I would be down with that. By the way, just really quickly, you were talking about Night Swimming before. I've got What's the Frequency, Kenneth, here ready to... explicit. Ooh. I never knew what he was saying, but now I'm excited about this song.
Hey, Lynn, could you grab Andrew saying explicit? Ooh.
Or
send
don't.
That to me.
Don't worry about it.
I've got some uses for that.
You've got a lot on your plate, Lynn. Like, honestly, don't worry about it. What was I going to say? Oh, the Worcester. You were talking about how, like, it's a kind of an easy go-to, night swimming. You know, like, oh, you know. And so I feel like you and I do joke about night swimming, or we'll sing stuff to the tune of night swimming a lot. I saw something somewhat, not disturbing, but somebody posted on the Facebook page, the Stens page, like, hey, you know, is that whole Worcester thing, is that kind of a common joke? Because I've heard, I was listening to another podcast, it was an unnamed podcast, that they were also kind of making the Worcester joke. Somebody said, how's it pronounced? And they said Worcester. So, you know, this joke that I'm so proud of, that I use very rarely, only on the right occasions, apparently, it's just kind of a common joke, I guess, or possibly maybe something that another podcast is known for. That would be problematic.
Is it a podcast that is in our orbit? Is it like one of the kind of podcasts that's essentially downstream from this one?
I don't think so. I think the person would have known because they're posting this to the Stens page. So I don't think it was at all like kind of in the TV Tail universe. It's just. Just one of those things. Every time I think I got something to share with the world, Luke, turns out
I don't. Listen, shared brain syndrome is real, and we've talked about it many times on the show. You can absolutely have thought of something that somebody else has also thought of, and you're not ripping them off, and it doesn't mean that you're not allowed to do it.
I think the bigger question here is, am I going to be in trouble for packing the toaster? We still have 5 more days in this place, and I packed the toaster today. I'm already out of the studio, and I'm already in the kitchen mentally packing, and I was thinking about how I packed up the toaster. We can live 5 days without a toaster, right?
Yeah, maybe. Can I tell you about an insane thing I'm considering doing?
Yeah.
That is actually probably – it's related to the toaster. So when we – you know, I was quite indulgent in my eating the last couple of days in Portland because my brother-in-law Josh is an amazing cook, and By the way, Pollo Bravo, that's their restaurant, Pine Street Market. Go check that out. This is the show where I just give plugs to all of my sister's various business operations. But so I was just like eating, you know, just eating not, you know, my usual attempting to kind of keep it sort of low carb, et cetera. So today I got up and I was like, got to get back on the horse. So I was like, I'm going to not eat a whole lot of food today until dinner time. And I'm not technically allowed to intermittent fast anymore because my wife made me go to the doctor because I was feeling lightheaded sometimes. But we're driving up from Portland and like we go to get like some coffee in DuPont, Washington. I'm going to get some like a cup of coffee from Starbucks. And we pull through the Starbucks and I get my coffee. And then Carrie says, I'm going to McDonald's. I'm hungry. And Carrie somehow is a person who can get food from McDonald's.
That's my wife.
And just have like, you know, like a reasonable amount of a Big Mac, which would be, I don't know, half of it. And she feels full and satisfied. And then she just moves on with her life. For me, that is opening an Ark of the Covenant that I don't have the personal responsibility for. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to get anything. But the whole drive, I was like so craving McDonald's. Mm-hmm. I'm drinking my coffee. And then I lean the seat back and I'm taking a nap. And I'm taking a nap 4 inches from the bag of half-consumed McDonald's food that's in the back, like on the floor of the back seat of the car now. And so this is what my crazy brain decided maybe I'm going to try to do. I'm thinking about going and buying like a quarter pounder with cheese, extra pickles, bringing it home. I have these low-carb English muffins, Mikey's. They're pretty good, actually, by the way. I would recommend for those of you on your low-carb grind life. I'm considering toasting, just gently toasting, a couple of, you know, a low-carb English muffin, taking the McDonald's burger off of its natural bun, putting it on a low-carb English muffin and eating it so as to get the experience of McDonald's but keep it relatively low-carb. That's the work of a crazy person.
Kind of, but it also sounds good. I mean, if you're it sounds like it would be enjoyable and, you know, and also like if you're trying to keep the weight off. This is a little bit
life hack, buddy.
It's either the greatest life hack or a sign of a the beginning of a spiral into mental illness.
By the way, Genevieve made these sliders that are like they're a little bit more healthy than just being ground beef. They're like ground beef with a lot of, I think, mushroom and onion. But texture wise, like it's ground up enough that it's all ground up together. So it's almost like meatloaf, but it's more hamburger than meatloaf. And she made a bunch of sliders out of them, and we keep them in the freezer. And you just pop fry them up when you want. Now the problem is we will also sometimes put them on a little slider roll, which I know doesn't really help you at all. But those are good. Luke, I know it's the end of the show. I know that I'm the one who said I need to be done by 3:30 and everything, but I just got some pretty big news in my email box, and it involves something IRL as well. So I'm going to do something.
TVTL breaking news.
I'm going to ask you to just hold your jets for 1 second. I'm going to walk away from this microphone. But I'm going to come back. I'm going to come back, and hopefully I'm going to be very excited when I get back. Okay, hopefully this pays off.
Hold on.
I'm just going to go eat some sliders. Hold on.
Very jealous. There's so many things I want to talk about with you, the listeners, now that Andrew's stepped away. But I feel like as soon as I get into the meat of whatever it is I'm going to talk about, he's going to come back, and he's going to be all jazzed up about some mysterious thing that he just found out about. By the way, I just realized I've been wearing an Apple Watch for 3 days. It hasn't had any power. I didn't bring the charging cord to Portland with me, and it died a couple of days ago. Just been wearing it, just wearing basically a brick on my wrist, which I'm now going to take off. So I'm not, wearing something that has no usefulness. Yes, do you come bearing good news?
Yes, I come bearing a box, Luke. That was just delivered to my porch. Do you want to take a guess as to what this is?
I know exactly what it is, and I think you should unbox it tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Not now?
Well, this is hashtag content. We're going to be here another 45 minutes. It's your Walkman.
It's my Walkman. You expect me not to open this box for 24 hours? I've been waiting for this thing forever.
Open it after the show and tell us tomorrow. Why don't you record yourself unboxing it And then just, you know, tell us about it tomorrow. I feel like it's going to open up a whole other...
I've been waiting for this moment for months, and it's finally here.
I feel like it's going to... We're going to be here for a good while if you open that thing up, which I know the listeners are probably fine with. But you got things to do. And again, it's hashtag content. Can't we... I mean, you could even make it a Hey Dummies video. I was thinking about making my McDonald's experiment a Hey Dummies video this week.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. Yeah, we got to kind of figure that out, too. I don't know if you want to... You're going to be here this week. Maybe we can do one together. Or if you want to, if you're going to go do that today, yeah, why don't you tape that?
Anyway, I'm not trying to torture you, but don't. I think that I'm genuinely curious if this Walkman that you bought on eBay that somehow there were no other bidders on. I'm really curious about if it works or not. But
all right.
I want to find that out tomorrow.
All right, so let's go out with What's the Frequency, Kenneth? And we don't have a show title, but I'll figure something out after the show.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really do appreciate it. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.